folks that are off the floor for committee meetings. We've got two committee meetings that are going for interim topics, and we did give them some latitude to do that. And unfortunately, the sponsor of the next couple bills is off the floor as well. So I think we've got sponsors for some of the other bills, so we're going to have to just jump around a little bit, and I apologize. So based on where we are with different bills, I think if the sponsor for 144 is ready, we will go with that bill next, and when those other folks get back, we will continue. So the next bill will be 144. We're sliding 144 in front of 134 for the time being, and we'll proceed with that bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I will go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll read the bill because the chairman is
here. Okay.
Representative Barlow.
The next bill for our consideration
is Senate File 144. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File Number 144, Medicaid and SNAP Eligibility Requirements, an act relating to welfare, sponsored by Senator Hicks. It was referred to Committee Number 10, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Clem, Hallinan, Roscoe, Stivar, and Wilson. No, Representatives Barlow, Dayton Selman, Sweeney, and Yin. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Representatives Kinner, Larson Lloyd, Olson, Summers, and Walters. No, Representatives Nicholas and Schwartz.
Representative, you've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report. It do so with the recommendation that Senate File 144 do pass, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to its sponsor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I don't have it. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative, please.
Thank you. I think there's a standing committee amendment. Do you want me to move that, or? I'll let the majority floor do it.
Mr. Chairman, I further move the standing committee amendment. Turn the explanation of the bill and the amendment over to the sponsor.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, there is a standing committee amendment. I think I'll just try to, I might just go ahead and ask if there's questions on the standing committee amendment. It does. It moves the age limit. Let me look on page 4 here. That'd be a good idea. Age from 6 years old to 8 years old for a parent that has that child, she would be exempt, or he would. And then it also moves the time that they are off, if they didn't meet the requirements, it was set at 12 months, and they moved it to 6 months in the committee. So if there aren't any questions, I'd ask for a question.
Representative Yin.
I just want to make a little bit of a correction on what the standing committee amendment does, being on the committee. The amendment essentially changes the lockout period on page 6 from 12 months to 6 months. Sorry, I might have also missed if you said that, but vote yes on the amendment.
Question having been called, question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the bill. Senate 144 establishes work requirements for non-disabled working-age Medicaid recipients who, for the most part, have no dependents. It brings our Medicaid into better alignment with our SNAP and TANF programs, which already have such requirements. This bill is not about punishment. This bill is about encouragement. It is about an incentive. It is about helping those who are able to return to self-sufficiency. This bill directs the Department of Health to apply to the Federal Department of Health and Human Services for a waiver. Wyoming will not be alone. Nine states have now secured the Medicaid work requirement waiver, with several others pending. This administration has strongly signaled that it supports work and is prepared to approve such waivers. The bill requires certain Medicaid recipients, not all, but some, to work or go to school for 20 hours per week, or they can participate in a work or job training program, or they also can volunteer in their community. This can include hospitals, food banks, youth programs, probably libraries and such, all of which need volunteers on a continual basis, or they can do any of the combination of one or more of these listed. The bill then lists a number of exemptions for those who would be overly burdened or who were unable to complete the requirements. The exemptions are there to make sure we not impose a burden on people who cannot handle it. And the department gets latitude to use its best judgment in carving out exemptions. In fact, it gives the departments the ability to adjust and adapt. The bill also seeks to coordinate and complement other similar programs, such in the TANF and SNAP programs, which is why part of it is administration is delegated to the Department of Family Services, where they already do these similar functions. The bill then designates that the federal savings realized by the state from this program shall, to the extent allowed under federal law, be used to support child care programs for other Medicaid recipients who are employed and need that support. What we are asking is not onerous, it is not unreasonable, and is not intended to be a punitive, despite how some might characterize it. Some have said this is not a work requirement. It is much as it is a work encouragement. In the data in other states, is promising. Among results, significant numbers of the able-bodied return to work. Incomes increase double or triple over a two-year period. Increased incomes more than offset the lost benefits. Time spent on welfare can be cut in half. Recipients become taxpayers, helping to support the truly needy. And taxpayers save money. Funds are available for other vital needs. We should pass this bill to help, not punish. Taxpayers will thank us, and so will those who benefit from the structure and encouragement provided by this bill. So I'll take questions.
Representative Washer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question for the bringer of the bill. I was wondering about a situation where a family has a spouse who's working, but they're still eligible for some of these benefits. Would the spouse be required to do the 20 hours of work or volunteer service if they are married to a working parent? And secondly, would homeschooling qualify for any of the exemptions?
Thank you, Representative Washit. Representative Klum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in answer to that, the department has determined unless you're receiving those services, then the requirement does not apply to you. For instance, if I was receiving Medicaid but my spouse was not, I would be responsible for those requirements if I could not meet one of those exemptions. Furthermore, when we talk about those opportunities, I guess the volunteer and things like that, some of that is left to the discretion of the department. The real meat of this, members, is on page 2, paragraph A, and this is just saying that our department, which is the Department of the department shall apply to the Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services for a waiver under 42 U.S.C. 1315 to implement the continuing eligibility requirements for medical assistance set forth in this section. Upon final approval of the terms and conditions of the waiver, the department shall implement this section. What this is referring to is an 1115 waiver under this section. And so really what we're talking about, members, is this bill sets forth some guidelines of what we want to really go and negotiate with. But the final product as far as what this will look like, what the feds will allow us to do as far as implementing work requirements and some of those exemptions and things like that, is really up for that's all negotiable at this point, and we'll take further action. But this just gives us that first step to say, you know what, we want to look into this. Several other states have done this, and several other states in doing this have seen positive results.
Thank you, Representative Clem. Chairman Kirkbride.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So three questions. One is it going to cost the state much in terms of increased personnel to monitor who's on the program and who isn't? One question is how many people in the state might this affect? And the third question is this an effort to have people work themselves off the rolls, so to speak, or just to maintain their current status but begin to contribute more to society? So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman Kirkbride. Representative Clem.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in answer to this, no, it's not going to require any more personnel that we have right now. Second question, I think, is who does this affect? And ultimately, with all the exemptions that we have in here, it affects a small number of people. And I'm don't quote me here, but I want to say it's somewhere around the neighborhood of 2,000 to 3,000 individuals all across Wyoming. And again, these are people who are non-disabled, do not have children at home, do not meet the requirements. For instance, if a certified healthcare provider says that you are medically unable to meet these requirements, i.e. you have some kind of chronic condition or something like that, you're maybe not disabled, but you're not able to meet the work requirements or the training requirements. So when you take all that into consideration, the number of able-bodied working adults who we're targeting here is relatively small. Mr. Chairman, I forgot the third question. I can get with you on the side here and try to answer that.
Question being called.
Can I speak, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, I'm sorry,
I didn't see you. I know, I'm too far away.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And folks, I've been studying this bill to some degree for the last few days because I like the idea of it, and I've been trying to get my head around it. And the more I get my head around it, the less I think that I am in support of it. And I'll only share with you that I think that it's worthy of trying to encourage people or incentivize people to participate in volunteer programs or to secure a job, to participate in job training programs. For the requirements that this is going to put on agencies, I mean, it doesn't tell that the Department of Health is the one that's determined to put in for the waiver, to draft, to make the application for the waiver. And then it puts on them the burden of drafting the bills because it doesn't really give any direction. These folks are supposed to report every 6 months on what they've done to do one of these, to look for a job, participate in a volunteer project, do something for 20 hours a week, but it doesn't really give a lot of definition on what they want to see that. So the Department of Health is left to draft rules to make all of this work. The question was asked, how many people will this impact? Initial projections around 3,200 people. But with the adoption of the House Standing Committee amendment of raising the children up to age 8 and including tribal members of that drops down significantly. The point was made that there's 9 other states, and this is really getting into why I'm struggling with this, is there's 9 other states that have adopted this, but all of them have expanded Medicaid. Except Wisconsin. And and on the information that I got. And Wisconsin already had in their Medicaid rules to include the population that we're trying to include. The concern here is that we're going to go through the effort, and it takes about 12 to 24 months to get an answer back from HHS on these 1115 waivers. And to date, there is very strong indication in the information I got back from the department that's going to be tasked with this that CMS is going to approve a work requirement. In fact, there's a suit out now with the state of Kentucky and CMS, and in that, on page 23 of the document filed, HHS pretty indicates that Medicaid expansion is the only one that, if a state has Medicaid expansion, that they will consider for work requirements on Medicaid, and if they haven't expanded Medicaid, that they have not and really are not looking to do that. I think that the other thing that I think happens here is if we pull these folks off, if we actually get these folks off from Medicaid that aren't doing this, and I think that they should work, I really do. But these are extremely poor families, most of them single mothers, that in the estimation of the department, we then shift pressure on them to get Social Security, SSI, and getting them off SSI is really difficult. So I think that they've been tracking work requirements in 14 states that have recently applied, and the average time of application approval, again, is 12 to 24 months. And I'm just going over the notes to do that. So I would just really encourage a no vote. Let's see what happens with some of the other changes in Medicaid requirements. You shift these folks off from that, that stays that way for about a year, but then our hospitals and health providers are going to have to absorb the cost for providing help to this population through their indigent care and compensated care anyway. So I don't know. As much as I would like to support this bill, I can't, and would encourage a no vote on this.
Thank you, Representative Larson. Representative Stivar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On for the bill. To answer a couple questions that the good representative from District 54 had, they're not doing any rules. This is a waiver. They're requesting a waiver for a work requirement. We already have one in the SNAP program, and they'll be the same, more likely the same requirements. So, you know, Wisconsin's already got it. The rest of the states have expanded Medicaid. So them requirements are already out there to work. All right. So this is a good bill. Let's let the Department of Health request the waiver and see if we get it.
Thank you, Representative Stivar. Representative Larson.
I would just share with the folks that the requirements for SNAP and TANF are under a completely different agency than Medicaid. You do have to amend your Medicaid plan as you make a request for an 1115 waiver. It's still going to take 12 to 24 months. That does not change.
Thank you, Representative Larson. The other Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On page 6, paragraph G, it actually states that the Department of Workforce Services shall provide all the necessary data requested by the department would be the Department of Health, regarding a medical assistance recipient's employment status or participation in an employment or training program or work program. So we're already doing this with the TAMP recipients and the SNAP.
Representative Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would really agree with Representative Larson from the middle of the state on all of his concerns, and I would urge a no vote on this and call for the question.
Thank you, Representative Sweeney. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very supportive of this measure, and I think it's helpful that we run through some pieces of it. You know, first, I want to run through what this is asking. So, one, worker attends school for 20 or more hours per week. Isn't the body very supportive of our community colleges, of our local schools? Two, participate in an employment and training program created under WS 422103 or a work program for 20 or more hours per week. That's work training. Trying to get people back into the workforce. Get a skill. Help them with working on a skill or a new area that they can work on. Volunteer with an established community service organization for 20 or more hours per week. So you can meet this by volunteering for 20 or more hours per week. I mean, are we saying that asking people to volunteer, that there's something wrong with that? I mean, when I volunteer, I'll tell you, I feel so good coming out of that experience. It just, I feel confident, I feel part of the community I'm in. Four, participate in any combination of the eligibility requirements of paragraphs 1 through 3 of this subsection for a total of 20 or more hours per week. So you can combine different parts of this. You could work for 5 hours. You could do workforce training for 7 hours. You could go to school for 3 hours. And then the remainder of volunteering, maybe 4 hours per week. Who does this apply to? Let's go through the bill. Anyone who is, who does this not apply to? Excuse me. Anyone who is 18 years of age or younger, 65 years of age or older, certified by a health care provider as medically unable to meet the requirements of subsection B of this section, pregnant, a parent, legal guardian, or other primary caregiver of a dependent who is under 8 years of age, or has a serious medical condition or disability determined by rule of the department. A regular participant in a drug addiction or alcoholic treatment or rehabilitation program which prevents the recipient from complying with the requirements of this section. Receiving unemployment compensation. Exempt from work requirements under the Temporary Assistance to Needy Families or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. I mean, you just look at all the exclusions here. This is written so narrowly so that we're doing the best we can to try to work people back towards self-sufficiency. I think this is written so narrowly because we want to try to help these people. You know, I was recently at a facility where individuals who were struggling go, and I asked the lead at the facility, you know, what's the number one thing we can do to help get these people back on their feet? And the person said, you know, I'd ask to remain anonymous, but the number one thing is that we have a narrowly tailored work requirement on these programs. A work encouragement is really what it is. It's about trying to help people. And I'd really ask for an aye vote. I mean, we believe in these workforce training programs, trying to get people back learning again, learning for a new profession or something new that they want to do. So let's help these bills. Vote aye. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gray. Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have issue with several members conferring these people like they're some other demographic that aren't all of our constituents, including a large portion of mine. But let's talk about these people. A couple things, right? Because this is really two demographics we're talking about. One are women with children, and not to get, you know, too controversial to Mike, but I would submit to you that once a child, because I have many of these families in my district, right, they can go to work or they can have another kid. And I would submit to you that some of them say, well, I'll just have another kid, and I know what that does to funding. But let me talk about the other segment that this really actually affects in a significant way. And you can look in your fiscal note. The data is there. It's these 18 to 26-year-olds. And these are the 18 to 26-year-olds that are already at a huge competitive disadvantage in our society, right, because these are the kids whose parents don't have the nice insurance to begin with. These are the kids who have already has everything working against them in life. You'll see that one portion of this is the foster kids, right? These are the kids who age out of the system who don't have the family to even go to on Thanksgiving or Christmas, and they're just thrown out in the world because, quite frankly, they didn't have a family to grow up with. All the data sets are super high about what happens to these kids, drug abuse, jail, suicide, et cetera. But that's really the two demographic populations we're talking about who aren't covered in all of the other regs that were being considered. It's mothers with kids. And I would submit to you, a lot of them might just decide to have another kid, which is probably not what we want. And it's the 18 to 26-year-old demographic of people who are already disadvantaged. And I know, and I appreciate the thought about, hey, well, I'll go volunteer, but I'm not sure it's volunteering if you're forced to do it. Forced volunteerism is an oxymoron to me. But really, what do we do in the situations where you got to work or go to school for 20 hours a week? Well, you get Christmas break. You get spring break. Maybe you can go join a volunteer program for your spring break. I appreciate that. But there are some cracks, and I think that's what I'm really worried about. Is there gotchas all through this bill that I think if we had an interim study or we really talked about and focused on the segments of our population this affects, these are people with, you know, maybe illnesses where they can't work that aren't diagnosed or their doctor won't say. But we have programs for that, right? We have Social Security disability. I just think there's just too much you're going to catch, and it's already that segment of the population that I know anecdotally we think aren't working hard enough or just sitting around watching TV. But I don't think that's who we're talking about. These are people that are raising kids or they're young adults in our society who already have stuff working against them, and now we're going to have more working against them. And maybe this will be good for them, and we're helping them, and you know we just need to kick them in the gear, and then they're going to thank us. I just don't think the constituents we're talking about here are going to believe that, but maybe the stick approach is the best way to go about it, and we can try it. But if we're going to try it, at least let's know the data and really talk about the segments and have some of these answers before putting some more burden on the people who are already pretty burdened in our society.
Thank you, Chairman Zwanitzer. Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the concerns my colleague, the chairman of revenue, has for people that fall through the cracks. But also people fall through the cracks who would benefit from this program, that would learn job skills, that would get off of, you know, get out and get a job. A job has some positive benefits for people. And I think that we need to look at that side of the issue as well. So I think we should support this bill, mainly for the possibility that it's going to improve the quality of life for some of these individuals. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And thank you, Representative Helen and Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I want to respond to two speakers ago. I just really think it's disappointing, the comment at the beginning of that speech questioning the intentions of what I said, and it's now, you know, the second or third time where I've heard that, and I just think it's really disappointing. I'm not going to get super offended or anything. I just think it's really disappointing. The bill has good intentions, and I'd urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Keep the discussion to the bill, if you could, Representative.
Thank you. I'm completed.
I noticed. Thank you, Representative Gray. Representative Duncan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against this bill, there's a lot of misconceptions when we talk about welfare, when we talk about Medicaid, when we talk about these quote-unquote people. One of the problems is, for one, let me give you an example. A mother who is diagnosed and suffered with multiple sclerosis, she would love to work. However, she's limited in the scope of her physical ability of energy and ability to work in the number of hours. But so she receives benefits. But not only that, some of these people who are recipients, they're called the working poor. They would love to work. However, the way our system is set up, they are limited in the amount of money that they can earn. They're limited in the amount of money they can save. We put them at a disadvantage because we don't encourage them to get out of the system, because we penalize them if they save any money, and we kick them off of a system that is meant to try and help and get them out. We have no fail-safes to get them in a transitional situation. So we need to look at this whole system as a whole rather than sitting here doing a Band-Aid. So it's great intentions, however, it's misguided. So in order to really look at it, it's a great idea, it's a great intention, however, we need to start over and look at it as a whole. And unless you've been in the situation and you've really looked at it from the ground up, it's truly misguided. Some of these, looking at it from the volunteer's perspective, these people love to volunteer. However, the volunteer people on the other side, they're very limited in resources. They're very limited on the fact that when you have people come in, they have to take time away to train these volunteers that come in. If you are forced to volunteer, you're not there for the right reasons. And so then you're taking time and resources away from those that are there for the right reasons. So there's a constant battle within this system. So we really need to look at the whole program as a whole. So I'm on and against this bill, even though it has noble intentions. There's a lot of pitfalls that need to be reevaluated and relooked at.
Thank you, Representative Duncan. Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I like this bill. I think this is a good piece of legislation, and I'm on and for it, based on several aspects. We heard that we're going to trap the working mothers and those types of aspects, but if you look through the exemptions, that's not the case. Starting on page 3, 18 years of age or younger, 65. We go into pregnant women, parent, legal guardian, or other primary caregiver or dependent, with the amendment, if they've got a dependent that's under 8 years of age, has a serious medical condition or disability. So these are the working age. The good chairman of revenue mentioned basically the folks we're going to grab here are the 18 to 26-year-olds that folks, their folks don't have insurance that they can jump onto. Well, I was one of those kids. Yeah. You know what I did? I went to work. I joined the United States military. Maybe that's not an option for some of these folks. But they can still go out and work. And that is an extremely popular aspect about this piece of legislation. I mean, folks are polled on this issue, and it's right around 75% of all voters in the United States are in favor of this. And I would hesitate, but I don't think it's too far off to say that that's probably higher in our state, as far as the folks that are in support of these types of requirements. So going on, it's just a request. If you go on to page 2 right at the start of the bill, it's just a request that the department shall apply to the Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Human Services for a waiver under this. So we're just finding out if we can even do this, considering what we're looking at in the future in regards to future Medicaid expansion, and considering the bills that we've looked at in the past that all required a work requirement, it's probably good that we at least start with something like this now, or at least have it in place. What's that going to hurt? Even the bills that we saw this year or the bills that we saw the prior year, all of those aspects, we looked at a Medicaid work requirement. And this is just a waiver to look at it. So, well, I do think that we can throw as many boogeymen at this deal as possible. This is something that's working in other states, and it's something that we're just asking for a waiver for. So let's give it a shot. Please vote aye.
Question being called. Oh. Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about what Medicaid is in the state of Wyoming. Age, blind, disabled, pregnant, and single mothers. That's who we're talking about. We are not an expansion state. In the study bill that we have, this is included in the study bill because that's an appropriate place to put it. And we can study it both for an expansion population and for our current population because we do need to know what those opportunities are. There's a lot of things that go into why people are in tough places in their lives in our communities. Lots of social determinants, other things. But I would suggest to you that the worst thing we could do is take away their health care. And that's the stick in this. We want them to have those benefits, but we're doing the exact wrong thing to get them there. We're saying, oh, by the way, if you don't do this, we're taking away your health care. You want to push them further down? Do that. There's no limitation here for, ongoing treatment for chronic disease, for mental health. There's none of that. They talk about, well, we can go negotiate. Well, let's actually understand what we're negotiating about. Ladies and gentlemen, on and against this bill, we can study this. We have that bill going forward. We can take a real look at this, understand really who the population is, and then come back with a more informed approach. I have no problem with training folks. Maybe we should revive that bill we just killed so we have an opportunity to actually give them training. Maybe we should talk about how we're going to deal with the uncompensated care when these folks are not receiving health care and we're dealing with that at our local hospitals. Let's have those conversations. But taking someone that's already down and saying we're going to push you further down, I don't know. That's not the community that I represent. I don't think that's what they'd want. We can poll on things. We can talk about national polling and everything. That doesn't matter when I go talk to my constituents. Well, my constituents, are we taking care of our own citizens? This is not going in that direction. This is going the opposite direction, in my view. Doesn't mean we can't take a hard look at it and understand it better. On and against the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Majority Floor Leader Barlow. Representative Penno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of the constituents in my area have a different opinion on some of that information that we just heard. I know, and I do know of several cases, of course, being in the business I was in prior, that I look at it as probably fraud, that the folks that are on this system, but they are capable of working. And I think that there's checks and balances in this bill that if they're in, obviously if they're in need of the Medicaid program, they will continue to get it. But there are some folks that would like that lift up to get out and work towards getting a job, work towards getting on their own. It's pretty uplifting for them. So I think that this is a start. And I think that, down the road, if there's some issues that come out of it, we can always improve on it. We've done that many a time down here. If the bill needs improving, we improve on it. So I would urge your support of it because I think it's a good start, and I think it will help people out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinnell. Representative McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and neutral on the subject, and going back two speakers ago, that is part of the problem is we just don't know what we don't know. 2 years ago when this bill came up, the department that studies health and is in charge of this came in and testified, and they said their best guess was at that time of the 65,000 people that are on Medicaid, their guess was that between 1,800 and 3,000 would fall into this work requirement. And that, again, was an estimate at that time. That was when the requirement was children up to 6 years old. Now that it's been moved up to children up to 8 years old, presumably that number would drop down to an even smaller amount. So the other problem is that currently in the state of Wyoming, when you apply for Medicaid, it's an online application. There's no personal interpersonal communication. So unfortunately, the department that's in charge of this just doesn't know. And on the application, it doesn't ask if you're working or it doesn't ask if you're doing volunteer work or anything else. So, it's a concept. Right now, it would be difficult to enforce and move forward with. And also, the number of people that it will actually affect, it's a small number. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative McGuire.
Question.
Question being called for. Question being called for. All those in favor of Representative Chairman Wilson's motion to the committee that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 144 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. Yeah, I'll do that. All those in favor, rise, which you're already doing. All those opposed, please rise. Where's the speaker? Oh, there he is. So what's the count? Okay. Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a standing division vote is required. We've already done that. A roll call vote is required. If the chief clerk could please call the roll.
Barlow. No. Blackburn. No. Blake. No. Brown. No. Burkhart. Aye. Burlingame. No. Clausen. Aye. Clem. Aye. Clifford. No. Connolly. No. Crank. No. Dayton Salmon. No. Duncan. No. Edwards. Aye. Eklund. Aye. Ayer. Aye. Flitner. No. Freeman. No. Furphy. Aye, Gray. Aye, Greer. Aye, Haley. No, Hallinan. Aye, Henderson. No, Hunt. Aye, Jennings. Aye, Kenner. No, Kirkbride. No, Larson Lloyd. Larson Lloyd. Larson Dan. Aye, Lindholm. Aye, Laux. Aye, McGuire. Aye, Miller. Aye, Newsom. No, Nicholas. No, Northrop excused. Obermuller. No, Olson. Aye, Paxton. No, Pelkey. No, Piperinen. Aye, Ponell. Aye, Roscoe. No, Salazar. Aye, Schwartz. No. Simpson. Aye. Summers. No. Stith. Aye. Stivar. Aye. Sweeney. No. Tass. Aye. Walters. No. Washit. Aye. Western. Aye. Wilson. No. Winter. Aye. Yin. No. Zawanitzer. No. Mr. Speaker. No. Larson Lloyd. Excused. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Blackburn? Blackburn?
Yes.
Are you changing? No to aye. Crank? No to aye. Further changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 30 aye, 28 no, 2 excused.
No, it doesn't. Those present. Yeah. All right. That it's passed. Yeah. Senate File 144, having passed with the majority of those present, has passed the Committee of the Whole. Thank you. Yeah, the next bill for our consideration is Senate File 134. Chairman Zwanitzer.
I need to read the bill.
The reading clerk should read the bill.
Reading clerk should read the bill before I do that, though.
Senate File Number 134, Severance Tax Exemption, an act relating to mine product taxes, sponsored by Senator Perkins. It was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Hallinan, Larson Dan, Sweeney, Western, and Zwanitzer. No, Representatives Blackburn, Connolly, Dayton Selman, and Roscoe.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Zwanitzer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 134 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, and members, you'll notice the standing committee amendment is substitute bill number 1. So we're on the same page, Mr. Chairman. I would ask to for the question on that vote right now, barring no discussion, to move the standing committee amendment, which is substitute bill number 1.
Thank you. Question having been called, all those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number 1, please say aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I would give over floor management of the bill to the good representative from District 37.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, you have the gold copy. A couple hours ago, I had a sheet delivered to your desk. It says Senate File 134. I think it's important to have this. It's got crude oil and natural gas prices the last 15 years. Okay, members, this bill... you can see I'm not a co-sponsor on it. I brought an amendment to the Revenue Committee, and they adopted the amendment. When this bill first was drafted, it included all new production, workovers, tertiary floods, and abandoned wells. Shut-in wells, I should say, is the correct term. It was engrossed where new production was taken out, but it came to this House. It had an 80 to $40 price of oil, the severance tax would drop from 6% to 4. Basically, it talked about half the production, but that's the idea. It went from 6.4 to 1.5 severance. So, and the thresholds for oil were 80. Above 80, the full severance. Below 80 to 40, it dropped to 4. Below 40, it dropped to 1.5 constitutional severance. The prices on natural gas were that range was below 5 and above 4. It went from 6 to 4, below 4, constitutional 1.5. There was also a limit in there on, or an index on Wyoming sour crude, which is really not a, there's one producer, maybe two in the state. And so I just pulled that out because sour crude rises, West Texas rises and falls. So members, this bill now is pretty simple. So if you flip over, members, to page two of this substitute and you look on lines five and six, this is the definition of a shut-in well. When this bill came to the House, it was six. You could see it was 2 years in previous statute. It was 6 months when it came to the House. This amendment moves that back out to 18 months. That's what a shut-in well is. Been shut down for at least 18 months now. That's the proposal. Okay? Now, if you look at the next 3914205 exemptions, this really is a piece of statute that looks at the current exemption for using a CO2 flood. So a producer doesn't have to pay severance on the CO2 that is injected into the ground. What this basically, if you want to write, you're going to get one or the other. If you're going to take the exemption on this tertiary production, which is later in this bill, you're not going to get this current exemption in law where the CO2 is exempt. You're not going to get both. Okay, Mr. Chairman, on bottom of page 2, paragraph H. Now, this talks about shut-in wells, crude oil and natural gas produced from previously shut-in wells, and we know a shut-in well now is 18 months in this substitute. The severance exemption exists for the next 12 months on line 23 of page 2. That used to be 24 months in the bill that came to the House. It's been changed with this amendment to 12 months. So the exemption would last for 12 months. And then, Mr. Chairman, if you move over to page 3 for shut-in wells, talks again about it's an 18-month on line 6. That corresponds with the page 2 I talked about. But then go down to lines 8 and 9. That the previous bill had $80 WTI. This bill has $49. And then it goes down to the gas, and it uses a different index. It talks about the Cheyenne hub and the Opal hub spot prices, a combination of those two, and it drops it from the previous $5 at the CIG index down to $2.95 on line 13. Now, I think I could direct you to this handout. So how did those prices, how did I come up with those prices? And it's not any big economic study or anything else. I look back 15 years. You can't see it in a color copy of this, and it's black and white, but I circled them. You can see West Texas, right? 17-16-04-03. So four times in the last 15 years, this exemption then would have kicked in for shut-in wells, capital completions, or tertiary floods. That's all that's in this bill. Okay? Look at the natural gas prices. You can see Opal and Cheyenne. The Henry Hub is not part of that, but the average over there, and this is used more by our Craig folks. That's why I didn't use the CIG index. We don't use it with our economic analysis folks. You can see two times those prices in the last 15 years. So, Mr. Chairman, that's how the numbers are arrived. And then the next paragraph N on page 3, line 16, and you can read it on 17, production resulting from a capital workover recompletion. 12 months, you get this exemption. Flip over to page 4, lines 2 and lines 5, it's the same prices. And, Mr. Chairman, then if you go down to paragraph O, and this is the exemption then on injection of CO2 on lines 12 and 13 or other tertiary injection, you know, water flood injection, those kind of things. If you qualify for this exemption, it's the 12 months, it's the same prices. And then, Mr. Chairman, bringing this home, the final stretch on paragraph P on line 5, you can see it's got to be a 6-month rolling average. I think that's important, that number, on these indexes. And then, Mr. Chairman, distribution, I think, is a key change in this bill. And so if you flip, really, it takes you over to the last page of the bill. Members, if you'll look on the new language, when any of these exemptions are applied, now the tax will go from 6 down to 4. Doesn't go 6 to 4 to 1.5. It's not three steps. It either is below those spot prices for that 6-month average, and you bring on a shut-in well, you could get for the next year a 33% reduction in your severance. And really, why do you do that? Because right now it's shut in. It's nothing from nothing's nothing. So what happens if it brings back production? So then I changed the distribution on this. Instead of flowing it right into our checking account, there's nothing from nothing from nothing, and all of a sudden we've got something. For this year of this exemption on this 4% sales tax, it's going to be divided 2 and 2. And you can see that on line 8, 3914204, Romanette A2, that is a half-cent statutory severance. That goes into the permanent mill trust fund. The 1.5 is already going, so that equals 2% in the permanent mill trust fund. Then keep reading farther down on line 10 of page 6, 3914204A3. That's a statutory 2% that goes to the common school permanent account, common school permanent land fund. So if we grant this, if it happens and we bring on new production, we're not just going to flow it to checking accounts. We're going to flow it for 12 months into our two permanent funds, try to grow them a little bit. Then after 12 months, the exemption goes away and the 6% severance flows like it does according to statute. 1.5 to the permanent fund, and then the other parts flow through our caps and through our statute. So that's really what I'm trying to do with this bill, and stand for any questions or comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Chairman Zwanenzer.
Thanks, Mr. I was going to move. Let me wait a second. I have an amendment, but I think there's some discussion first.
All right. Thank you. Representative Stith.
Mr. Chairman, just a question for the bringer of the bill, the substitute bill. Do we have any economic analysis to determine if producers, for example, will bring previously shut-in wells online for, say, natural gas when the price is below $2.95 an MCF? Any sense for what people, producers, might actually do? Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, not good analysis, to be honest with you. I mean, we had a report that came in last fall to our Minerals Committee. That's it. It was a report. I'm not going to say any more adjectives. But I think the other thing I guess I would say to you, that if you move this bill forward today on Committee of the Whole, I'm going to bring a second reading amendment tomorrow to put like a 5-year sunset on this, because I think you ought to prove it out. Let's learn and see. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. But I don't think we want to let something flow in the green books forever, and without, because these things, as we know, sometimes don't get revisited for decades at a time. So I'm going to bring that, if I can remember, and you can help me, to bring that tomorrow. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you bring it tomorrow, you'll be here by yourself. Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, when a well's shut in for 18 months, it means it's not really a good well at that time. It's producing, might produce a small amount of oil or gas, but it's not a big producer. At that point in time, the companies look at just plugging and abandoning that well and moving on to something else. They aren't making enough money out of it to make it worthwhile. This encourages them to bring that well back on, either in tertiary production or to recomplete or to do some other work to it and maybe make a good producer out of it, especially with a lot of the newer technologies. And it gives them a little bit of a severance tax break for doing that. Now, in the meantime, when it's shut in, we're getting very little tax money out of it. When they bring it back on, we get the production, we get the severance taxes, we get the ad valorem taxes, we get sales and use taxes on the equipment that they'll put on that well. If they plug and abandon it, it's just gone. This is to encourage them on those few wells, and there's not a lot, and there's not probably a lot of production that's being lost, to bring those wells back on and make good use of them. On and for the bill. It's a good bill. Thank even though we shouldn't say that.
Thank you, Representative Burkhart. Madam Minority Floor Leader Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I just want to share with you a little bit about what happened in the committee so that you have some more of the information. So we don't often see a gold bill, but the reason that we have a substitute bill is because the amendment was so long and complicated that it was longer than the bill itself. So what you're looking at is something that is very clean. But what it did is it changed virtually every element of the bill that we were given to start with and to contemplate in the committee. So the dollar figure ranges that you see in here are completely different. The original bill had kind of different paragraphs and dollar figures for sweet and sour crude. They're joined together in this bill. The time periods that you see for the triggers have all been changed, and what index is used has been changed as well. That's a lot of change. I honestly think this is better than what we were given, but the vetting of each and every one of those elements is probably important. No one in the room had time to think about these figures much versus the ones that were in the original bill. So I'd urge caution as you go forward and understand that, again, five elements were changed throughout the entire bill.
Thank you, Madam Minority Floor Leader. Chairman Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This seems to be my year to get up and ask questions about subjects about which I know nothing. Started with fences, now I'm going to do oil and gas. I think the only thing remaining is for me to ask about brands, but my time might be running out. So my question on this, and I'm not proud to ask a really simple-minded question, but if we're going to encourage folks to produce more at the time when the prices are really low, just Econ 101, isn't that a time when we maybe already have too much production and that's why the price is really low? So wouldn't this just encourage more production in a flooded market to drive the price down even lower? I realize that might be really simple-minded, but maybe there's a simple answer.
Thank you, Chairman Wilson. Representative Clausen.
Mr. Chairman, so I'm not sure if I'm for or against it. I think this bill is very marginal at best, but kind of building on what the last speaker went on. So there's a theory with oil that the cheapest place to store it is in the ground, and then capital follows the cheapest oil. So really, there's not really a huge advantage to giving a tax break when it's super cheap, because theoretically that stuff would come back online when the price of production comes back up. So I'm not for or against, but it's marginal at best.
Thank you, Representative Clausen. Representative Flitner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm too going to probably ask a really ignorant question here, but I guess I need to understand better, why is this necessary? Because when our cattle prices go down, we don't get a tax exemption. So just help me out with this. I'm not necessarily for or against it at this point. I just need to understand what we're trying to help here and why.
Thank you, Representative Flitner. Majority Floor Leader Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in current statute, we have already several type of breaks and severance tax. One is for stripper wells, and it's the same kind of 2%. What I'd like to know from the members, what's the evidence that that 2% reduction, which, by the way, is 33%, we talk about a little break, that's 33% because the current severance rate on minerals, on oil and gas, is 6%. So knock 2% off that, you're getting a 33% break in your tax burden severance tax. So what I want to know is, what's the evidence that's working for those stripper wells, which are defined as very low producing wells, 25 barrels or less, et cetera, et cetera. So what's the evidence there? Because I can tell you the evidence on the place I have, it doesn't work. Because stripper wells, at the end of their life, they are no longer valuable for anybody. And all I have now is a continuing liability, environmental liability, because nobody wants to deal with them. So what's the evidence that current programs are working? I don't mind, helping, giving them a break when it's really necessary, but does it work with what we already have? Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have the evidence on the stripper wells currently, but I did want to answer maybe some other questions about why. So the good Chairman of Labor and Health, I think the quick answer to that is speculation that prices will rise. And so we have this index for 6 months, as you'll look, and you can kind of, it's on a six-month average, but as things are ramping back up in production, companies are going to start looking around. Because this is a competitive environment, right? We're not the only oil and gas state. And we had this study, where this really came from is a study done throughout 2018 that said we're not as competitive as other states. We're about 4% lagging. So that's part of it is, you know, when companies, because it costs a lot more money to build a new well. So let's start there. Prices are coming back. Things are doing well. Do we drill a new well, or can you get some money if you go back to a previously shut-in well and can get some more life cycle out of that? That's jobs in our communities and production. The other thing that I'm not sure anyone's talking about, but I think the fear is there, you know, in 50 or 100 years, I can appreciate that oil in the ground is great and it's an asset long-term, but I think there's got to be some understanding, some fear that maybe oil and gas are not going to be the same levels in 100 years or even 50 years, right? As other sources of energy become more competitive, there is a little bit of a push that if we don't utilize our resources, it becomes a stranded asset that we never actually will utilize. And so I think that's part of the conversation as well. But really the purpose behind this bill is that we are actually at a competitive disadvantage when getting oil and gas companies into Wyoming on our pricing. And so we have some other hidden costs that they have to pay, and this is one actually very small way from what was anticipated before this bill went through the other body and then amended over here, that we could still try to get some production out of previously shut-in wells, and it is on a speculative curve that things are going to get better, and if they're not going to get better, they can at least hold on and maybe get some help because of all of the other tax benefits, economic benefits, jobs in your community benefits, that this helps. Because once they move on to somewhere else, they don't just easily come right back. And so I have committed a whole amendment here in a second to kind of alleviate one of those concerns. But that's really the impetus and force behind the bill is once they're gone, they move on and they don't come back, and then we're stuck. So if we can think about keeping them in the area and maybe competitive for a little bit longer and keeping a previously dug well producing a little bit longer, that's a lot more money to our state.
Thank you, Chairman Zwanitzer. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think to the good majority floor leader's question, is there evidence that what we currently have in place doing any good? I think that depends on the particular field that they're all a little bit different, but I am aware of some of those little fields in Fremont County where this has done very well, giving them that break on some of these, you know, 4, 5, 6 barrels a day production. That's the difference between making it worth anything or shutting it in. I would not argue with his example. I'm sure that he's accurate on what's happened there with him. But I also know of areas where this has worked and does prove beneficial. If I were to come, you know, in some of our, what's interesting, particularly if you go down along the southern border of the state, southwestern part of the state, where originally a lot of those old fields down there were oil wells. They weren't real prolific, but they were pretty good. And then as there really became a market for natural gas, that's really what they started drilling for, and in the old conventional ways, and there was and with the production in different zones, but with that production would come some oil as well. Well, now with the price of natural gas and the price of oil, if you could go into some of those old wells that have been sitting idle and come up to some of those different zones that are known to be producing crude oil, this is a wonderful tool that allows you a little break, because you're going to have to invest some stuff in this, some capital completion, some redrilling, probably some stimulation of some sort. I think that it's – and right now they're shut in. A lot of those old fields are shut in. If they're gas wells, there's no sense going in and completely drilling a new well. If you can come up whole, plug it, stimulate it, and maybe find – some oil that then we generate tax revenue off from. However, in the process of doing that, it takes time to do that. You may test a well for 6 months before you finally determine if that stimulation process and the production is going to be stable, that it moves forward. So I would really like to move that shut-in time back to 6 months, but that may be an amendment coming forward. I think it really gives these operators that are coming in and buying up some of these older fields that have traditionally been one product the ability to shift to another commodity, meaning from natural gas to crude oil, or it may be an old oil field that then they decide that they can do some CO2 injection. But not all fields are conducive to that. It may take some time to prove that. And in that whole process, having the ability to get some of this severance tax break might mean the difference between them even trying it or not trying it. So I think that I have a few concerns I'd like to do some amendments on, but I think structurally this is a break that I think is viable. I apologize. I'm trying to think what we can do for the cattle producers so that they can get a break, but we'll work on that during the interim maybe. So I'd encourage you to vote for this. There might be a few things we need to do to it, but boy, I wouldn't kill it on this first reading.
Thank you, Representative Larson. Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm on and for the bill. There's been some good discussion on this. The good revenue chairman brought up some good points. I think the help here is more for employment in Wyoming, not so much as increasing severance taxes from these marginal wells. You know, most of these wells are drilled by big multinational corporations, and when they come to the end of their life, they either plug and abandon them, or they sell them to a local small operator, and they work in all our communities across the state. You know, there's oil fields in my county that are over 100 years old. So yeah, they can keep squeezing a little bit more out every year, on, and that provides a good paying job for a few people, the pumpers, the workover people that have to go out and clean up these wells occasionally. So I support it because of the employment nature of the bill. As far as the bottom line revenue, I really don't think it's going to make a nickel's worth of difference. Okay? There'll be maybe slightly increased production. To go to the good majority floor leader's question about how this fits in with the strip wells, I'm not for sure. I also understand his concerns, because when the big boys leave, who are well-funded and have good bonding capabilities, a smaller operator may not be able to take care of some of the issues that are left on the property. But I hope we can work through these issues. And, this might be in communities in my county. I think there's a number of people that work in this, but the amount of oil produced is an asterisk on our revenue sheets.
Thank you, Chairman Miller. Chairman Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the biggest problem I have with this bill is that we don't know who, where, or how this is going to impact us. We don't know the number of wells that will be impacted, but just for example, you know, immediately west of this town or on the way up heading north, there's been an extremely large increase in the amount of production in old oil field areas, where the really big boys come in, and they put in their big wells, and they come in with new horizontal drilling. And my understanding is on some of these, I mean, they're bringing in 2,000 to 3,000 barrels a day on these reworking old wells. And is the idea then, and my other understanding, or what I've heard is, and I don't really know, this is what I need explanation of, is that that type of production tends to only last about 6 months to a year, and then the quantity of oil just drops dramatically. So what we're doing is we're letting them take all the oil under this. Are we letting them take all the oil out, the major production, before we start assessing a tax. And so we're losing the tax on those dollars, and they just get it, and so we don't benefit from it. So if that's the case, then on large wells with large productions, should we have caps on the production so that they can only get the tax credit for the first 500 gallons a day or a certain amount of barrels per day, so that we ensure that we have a maximum amount of, or at least some amount of revenues coming in based on those large wells. On the little guys, on the tertiary stuff where they come in and they prop it back up, that makes sense to me. But I just want to know, are we covering all our bases? Are we allowing those really large wells a tax credit that they certainly don't need and that only injures us? How many wells are we talking about, and how who can educate us on figuring out if we're doing the right thing in the next couple of days?
Thank you, Chairman Nicholas. Representative Clausen.
So there, Mr. Chairman, so there could be an unintended consequence with holding on to some of these small, low-producing wells, especially in our area. So most of these contracts, if they're producing, the minerals are held by production, and it actually keeps people or larger companies from going in and producing new large horizontal wells from some of these little ones. So just something to think about.
Thank you, Representative Clausen. Chairman Zwanen, sir.
Thanks first, Mr. Chairman. Just a little bit of explanation. This bill is really about natural gas, right? So if you look through it, oil, crude oil production, we've had this in place for 20-some-odd years that under certain conditions they can be exempt from taxes. What we're really doing, if you read through the bill, is adding natural gas. And then in some places it's oil and gas because these are, you know, the same wells we're really talking about. It just depends what you're getting out of them. And so a lot of that discussion on kind of oil fields, right, that's not really what this bill does. We're just including natural gas because it's a much more dynamic and volatile environment. And as the good chairman of TRW said, these are for smaller companies in Wyoming, not the huge large corporations, but for your local people who are picking up after the big boys leave, this is really who it's designed to help, especially in certain parts of our state. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to move Standing Committee Amendment, no, House Committee of the Whole Amendment number one to this bill, Senate File 134. And so what it does is it's when we were talking about previously shut-in wells, and in the version from the other body that came over, it was 6 months that they had to be shut in for 6 months. And I had concerns with that as well because I thought, you know, some companies could play some games and might, you know, shut in a well hoping for this tax break. Under the amendment we put on in committee, we made it 18 months, but that really concerns me too because you don't want people to totally move on. You're no longer in the same gas play. And so I thought 12 was actually a really good compromise. I don't think you'll have corporations gaming the system to just shut them in to open them back up in a 12-month period like you might with six in some environments. But especially with these new thresholds and ratios we put on, I don't even see maybe that fear anymore coming into play because now that it's got to have certain market conditions. So I thought about going all the way back to six, but thought 12 months may be the best number because we are talking about both oil and natural gas in the same section. And actually, the more I think about it over the weekend, we may have a second reading amendment that divides those up because of the volatility of gas more so than oil lately. But anyway, that is my amendment, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but it's there on page 2 to take a shut-in well to only 12 months. I think you heard the good vice chairman of minerals talk about why 18 months was a problem. And then on page 3, line 6, again, shut in less than 12 months.
We are on committee of the whole amendment number 1. Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. The 12 months is a good figure, and I'm on and for the amendment. At 12 months, after 12 months, the owners of the wells pay a penalty for leaving it shut in. They can leave it shut in for 12 months. After that, they start paying a penalty because the state's not getting any money. So to get some money, that's where it kicks in, and they pay a penalty, a bonding, so in effect, to leave those wells shut in. And the cutoff is 12 months, so this is a good amendment. Just happens to, I will assume the chairman of revenue knew that, and that's why, no? He yes, he did. Okay. It was genius. So I would say please support the amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed the House, and we're back on the bill. Question being called.
No?
Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Zwanitzer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 134 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please rise. All those opposed, rise. And it appears to be fewer than 34. Senate File 134 is passed Committee of the Whole. Representative Summer.
Mr. Chairman, pursuant to Mason's Section 480 through 483, I move to rescind the House's vote, resulting in the indefinite postponement of Senate File 122 under House Rule 6-6B.
That motion appears to be in order, and that motion is debatable. The question is, should the House rescind its previous vote, resulting in the indefinite postponement of Senate File 122? Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. After we had a great debate on that bill, it was the Wyoming Works bill. I think it's worth, you know, the bill may have some issues, but in the end, that's part of our job, I believe, to continue to work legislation to make it better. And in the end, we do need to create good jobs, and we need to fill those jobs in Wyoming. So I would urge you to support this.
Is there any further discussion on the motion?
Question.
This motion requires a vote of the majority of the members of the House, and the chief clerk will call the roll. Oh, okay. Well, we'll continue our discussion. Representative Gray.
I was just going to say point of order. Can we lay out the motion? And thank you.
Okay. So an aye vote would be a vote to rescind the earlier vote. So if you vote aye, you're voting to bring it back to the floor. If you vote no, you are voting in favor of the status quo. So will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Barlow. Aye. Blackburn. No. Blake.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart. Aye. Burlingame. Aye. Clausen. No. Clem. No. Clifford. Aye. Connolly. No. Crank. Aye. Dayton Selman. Aye. Duncan. No. Edwards. No. Eklund. Air. No. Flitner. No. Freeman. Aye. Furphy.
Aye.
Aye. Gray.
No.
Greer. Greer. Haley. Haley. Aye. Hallinan. No. Henderson. Aye. Hunt. No. Jennings. Aye. Kenner. Kenner. Kirkbride. No. Larson Lloyd. Aye. Larson Dan. Aye. Lindholm. Lindholm. Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Newsom.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrop excused. Obermuller.
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Ponell.
No.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
No.
Simpson.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stiff.
Aye.
Stivar.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Tass.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Washit.
Aye.
Western.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winter.
Aye.
Yin.
No.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Greer.
No.
Kenner.
Aye.
Lindholm. Lindholm excused. Oh. Lindholm. Lindholm. Aye. Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 38 aye, 21 no, 1 excused.
By your action, you have rescinded the House's vote on Senate File 122. The question is whether the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it is to do so with recommendation that Senate File 120 do pass. Okay. Here. Oh. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barlow.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. So we are now on the bill, correct?
Yes, we are now on the bill.
Thank you.
I think I said that.
Blackburn.
No.
No. Blake.
Aye.
Aye. Brown.
Aye.
Aye. Burkhart.
No.
Burlingame.
Aye.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
No.
Clifford.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton Selman.
Aye.
Duncan.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Ayer.
No.
Flitner.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Furphy.
Aye.
Gray.
No.
Greer.
No.
Haley.
Aye.
Hallinan.
No.
Henderson.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Jennings.
Aye.
Kenner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
No.
Laux.
Aye.
McGuire.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Newsom.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Northrop excused. Obermuller.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Paxton.
Aye.
Pelkey.
Aye.
Piperinen.
No.
Pannell.
No.
No. Roscoe.
Aye.
Salazar.
Aye.
Schwartz.
No.
Simpson.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stith.
Aye.
Stivar.
No.
Sweeney.
Aye.
Tass.
Aye.
Walters.
Aye.
Washit.
Aye.
Western.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winter.
Aye.
Yin.
No.
Zwanitzer.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Eklund.
Aye to no.
Further changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 38 aye, 21 no, 1 excused.
Senate File 112 has passed the committee of the whole. 122 has passed the committee of the whole. Thank you so much. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 161. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 161, Management Council Membership 2, an act relating to the legislature, sponsored by Senator Hicks. It was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Brown, Greer, Harshman, Larson, Dan, Lindholm, Miller, and Wilson. No, Representatives Barlow, Connolly, and Pelkey. Excused, Representatives Nicholas, Summers, and Walters.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise report, I do so with the recommendation that Senate File 161 do pass, and I further recommend the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
You've heard the motion on the Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Or do you? Okay. All right. Question, thank you. Question having been called, all those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, say aye. Those opposed?
No.
We are back on the bill. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. We are now back on the bill.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman.
Oh,
division? Division being called. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please rise. Those opposed? That's fewer than 36. The Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 passes. We are now back on the bill. And Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill crossed over from the other body, and we've heard it the last couple of sessions on this body. I know my good friend from Green River was probably instrumental in defeating this bill a couple of years ago. I think it's come now from the Senate, and there's 13 members on Management Council. And so as a speaker, I put this bill to the Rules Committee because the Rules is the biggest committee we have, and it's probably more reflective of a committee of the whole, so more people could look at it before we bring it to the committee of the whole. So the amendment was the way the bill came across the hall from us. There's 13 members. Currently, there's 5 from the minority party, and I don't know what that percentage. I got all that written on my notes. I have my notes in front of me. It's like 38%. Somebody nod. I guess I could do the math. But anyway, and then working off memory. So the bill, as it came down in gross, actually reduced that to 3. And had a different selection process, and I thought it was a little bit chaotic. Some people like that, and but I didn't. So a good member of the Rules Committee from Powell brought an amendment which really moves that threshold back to 4. And I think, and that's right around 31%. And the version that came to us moved it to 3, which is down around 22%. And so I think we've kind of come back to a spot where, you know, it was asked me by in committee, what problem are we trying to fix? And I don't know. It's a massive problem. It's really why I brought HJ6. I mean, it's really about having your voice represented and making sure that the majority, you know, protects the minority and all those things. So this amendment that you just adopted, I think, is a much better alternative than the previous bill. I think, what's the problem we're trying to fix? I think the problem really for the other body was that the entire caucus of the minority is on management council. I don't know, and I think that's really, and so then this amendment has a delayed effective date. It won't affect the 65th. It'll begin with the 66th. But I think that threshold, and I'll have the sponsor of the amendment kind of explain that, it doesn't have to get to 30% again to kick back to 5 members again, and so right at 30%. So can kick it back to 5, which is 38%. So I think it's something that we're going to talk about, and but I do believe the amendment made this bill, whether this bill moves on from Committee of the Whole or not, the amendment made it much better in my view. So with that, I'd turn it over to the good representative from Powell, Mr. Chairman, if that'd be okay.
Rick? That would indeed. Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Speaker. That was a good explanation. The lower percentage was actually 23% that the Senate had proposed on their bill. I just wanted to explain, or I guess tell you, the last time the minority party had 30% in our House was in 2008. But and that's probably the main point of the amendment. In our rules, the House rules, 2-3, it talks about committee memberships, and it says memberships on committees shall be apportioned as nearly as possible to reflect the percentage of the elected membership of the majority and minority parties of the House. And then it gives a couple exceptions. But I think it was really, really important that management council got closer to what our percentage of our house is right now. And like was said before, when the house opposite of the chair of the committee is above 30% minority party, then it would switch that member to that minority party. But I think it's a good amendment, good bill. Let's vote aye.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For obvious reasons, I'm not entirely thrilled with this bill. But what I will say that in 2028, when my party has rebounded to the point where we have 80% of this body, we will be more magnanimous.
Thank you, Representative Schwartz. Representative Yin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment, but I think even though I like the intent of my amendment, which is to try to attempt to make Management Council a bit more nonpartisan, I think that it won't do what I intended to do, so I respectfully withdraw my Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 161.
Thank you, Representative Yin. Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good old friend of mine. I really enjoy speaking on this one. So, Management Council. Does anybody know when that was formed? I can't use props, but if you look at that first picture past the doorway there, 41st Legislature passed that in 1971. And it included, what it boiled down to, it was 11 members. 7 in the majority, 4 in the minority party. And next time this statute was amended was 1973. And in the first one, it was the 10 members selected the one additional member from either house. So in 71, there were 10 members. The one was selected by those 10 members. It could have been from either party, from either house. So in 73, they tightened that up a little bit, I guess. And by the way, that's the year I graduated high school, so fondly remember that one. In 73, it stayed the same, but the same as 71, but the party was chosen by the caucus, the additional one member. So, and that stayed the same. 4 Democrats, 7 Republicans, or 4 minority, 7 majority. And then the last major change that this was really done was 1991. And what it did was it included, in the past it was in the Senate, it was a president, majority floor leader, minority floor leader, 2 at large, 1 Republican, 1 Democrat. In the House, it was a speaker, majority floor, minority floor, 2 at large, 1 from each party. In 91, they went to 13 members, so they included the vice president of the Senate and the speaker pro tem. So now it's like 13. The major exception is every year it goes back and forth. This year it's the Senate is the chairman of the House. A couple years ago, it was the speaker was the chairman. So it's always the opposite party, whoever is the chairman of that thing. So from 71 to now, no real issues. They just changed the makeup a little bit, added 2 more members. And the Management Council, in my mind, it just sets policy. And when you set policy, you want a wide variety of opinions. You don't want just one opinion, one huge majority opinion. I say you want a diverse opinion. And I know, you know, it's a Friday. We all want to go home, those of us who are going home. I really got impassioned last time I spoke here. I hear from the speaker. He's the speaker of both parties. When my wife's father got sick, I came to this body, and I asked for prayers for him, and by gosh, they worked. They worked. There is not a problem here. And, you know, I guess, if that's how you want to vote and add one more of the majority party, then that's how the vote will lay. But I'm saying there isn't a problem. There's not a problem here. And I urge an aye vote, and let's put this one to bed for the rest of the session, please. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Blake. Representative Burlingame.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My staff at my work called the first couple days that we came here and did our training, they called it baby legislature school. And they would ask me every day, how was baby legislature school? And I'd say, it was great. And I would tell them everything that we were being taught here. And the fulcrum of what we were taught was that, you know, we come in from our different districts. We come in, you know, from our different regions with our different, you know, industries, and we definitely come in from our different parties. But when we come to the people's house, we come to do the people's work. And it's great that we have all of those different backgrounds to draw on. But as my friends from another faith, they have a really great, very handsome apostle called the Silver Fox. And he was talking about the sameness that starts creeping in when we want to make everybody the same. And he said, we don't want a whole symphony of piccolo players. It just doesn't sound good. A piccolo is nice on its own, but you don't want your whole orchestra made up of only that one thing. And I think he was right, that there is something really rich and robust about the distinction and the difference that we bring to our committees. And we were told to count on it, right? We were told, like, when you come, you can drop all of that sort of partisan bickering and all of those differences that keep us separated, and you can count on each other to do the people's work. So we have faith in that, and we believe that that's true, and that we don't need a super, super, super majority, that a super majority does the trick, and that if you have folks from the political party that I happen to belong to on this management council, that not only will it not be a detriment, but we're going to work with you. We're going to bring new voices. We're going to bring experiences that don't reflect the ones that you already know. And we're going to listen to you. And we're going to take the experiences that you have that we don't already know. That's what Johnny Cash says. You have to learn what you already don't know how. And we'll bring that back to our communities. But we can only do that if you give us the opportunity to stay in the room, which I believe is the promise when we all went to baby legislature school that was made, that we're all going to have a seat at the table, and we're going to have an opportunity to learn from one another. So I'm just asking you, let us stay at the table. Make good on that promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Burlingame. I'm going to call on Representative Clifford in a moment, but I believe that Representative Blake has a correction to make.
Yeah, I got so wound up there, and it's been a long time since I was a baby legislator school. I meant to say vote no. Vote no. Vote no, please. Thank you, and I appreciate the good chairman of TRW pointing that out to me. Please vote no. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Blake. Representative Clifford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Itatida uni usini nate ena. Good afternoon, relatives. Hinani e nana. I am Arapaho. Nana nana hisi. I am a woman. I am part of 2,088 women, which includes 7 wonderful women in this body. And we are taking a seat in state legislatures, the largest number in history. Hana janataya, hinen dana. I am of the blue sky people. Since the beginning of my legislative journey, when I was just Representative-elect Clifford, I received a wafe gutha, a phone call, from my NACHA, the chief, the leader, the committee of the best committee in this body. And he left me a wonderful voicemail, a wonderful one, very welcoming, and stated to me that I would find that the people of this wonderful body really don't focus on partisan policies, that the people of this body focus on the problems that need to be fixed. And when I attended the orientation for freshman legislators, I heard multiple times from the great NACHA, the leader of this body, the speaker, that we are a team. Each of us is important. We work together through a wonderful process that makes this great state of Wyoming wonderful.
Thank you, Representative Clifford. Question being called. The amendment had been withdrawn. Yeah. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File 161 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of passage of Senate File 161, please rise.
Thank you.
And all those opposed, please rise. It appears to be fewer than 32. Senate File 161 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We're now on Senate File 31. Representative Stitt.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to acknowledge in our VIP section a number of people from Rock Springs. We have RJ and Angela Pieper. I'm not sure what political party they have belonged to. I don't see party. And we also have
I'm touched.
Former Representative Joe Barbuto here in the House. So give a warm welcome.
Welcome home, Representative Barbuto. Here we go. Okay. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 31. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File Number 31, Revisers Bill, an act relating to the revision of statutes. Sponsored by Management Council. It was referred to Committee Number 12, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Representatives Brown, Connolly, Harshman, Larson Dan, Lindholm, Miller, Nicholas, Pelkey, Summers, Walters, and Wilson. Excused, Representatives Barlow and Greer.
Speaker Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 31, Revisers Bill, do pass, and I would move the explanation of the bill over to the good Majority Whip Lindholm.
Majority Whip Lindholm.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd also like to move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. So the revisers bill, for those members that are new, the revisers bill is where our good LSO staff have looked through our statutes, found spelling mistakes, duplicate entries, those types of things. And as we move through the as we move through this application, you'll notice that second and third reading will most likely have amendments also as they catch more things that we did spelling mistakes on or we need to clean up statutory definitions in the bills that we drafted this year. So every year of your legislative career, you're going to see a revisers bill, and it is the most exciting piece of legislation that I possibly have ever seen. So stay with me. So the first portion under Section 1, we've got amendments. The first portion, you'll see that we correct the name of the Juvenile Court Act to the Juvenile Justice Act. We also remove definitions of the term, this article, from Wyoming statutes. This term typically is not defined in Wyoming drafting practice and refers to groups of sections of the Wyoming statutes. Other references are repealed in Section 2 of this bill. We also remove an incorrect reference to the Office of Homeland Security's rulemaking authority. The governor has delegated that authority in Wyoming Statute 1913-104, C. Romanet 1. We also correct grammars, errors, and statutory citations. This is all under Section 1, mind you. We correct an incorrect statutory reference regarding glider kit certificates of title. A provision in this bill was removed in the Senate in the body down the hall regarding the applicability of the prevailing wage laws under Wyoming Statute 27-4413. The monetary amount in that section is not consistent with other laws, but based on our staff's research, it is not clear what the correct amount should be. We're going to continue to study that issue, but until then, we make that correction. Into Section 2, we get into the repealers. The first one, we repeal expired codified language creating the Advanced Conversion Technologies Task Force. That expired in 2017. And a report to the Joint Minerals Committee on Cease and Transfer that was due in 2014. So really not needed there. We also repeal a provision defining shall and may for education laws. The plain meaning of these words does not require a definition under Wyoming Statute 81103A, Romanet 1. We also repeal an expired reference relating to the examination of school district joint powers boards by the Department of Insurance in the context of the school risk retention program. repeal an existing provision specifying the applicability of an outdoor advertising provision. That expired in 1972. So as you can see, we continue to catch things in statute that shouldn't be there anymore. Making green books smaller, it's always a good thing. We also repeal remaining definitions of this article in Wyoming statute. Section 3, we get into the bill's effective July 1st, 2019. That's a standard effective date. I'll stand for questions on that unless you want me to go right to the committee of the whole amendment. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Blindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a committee of the whole amendment. I move committee of the whole amendment number 1 to the revisers bill, Senate file 31. Ask for your favorable consideration. The first one renumbers Wyoming statute 912-408 and 912-409. That's the endow provisions, which were codified in the wrong place last year. That corrects that. We also correct errors in Senate file 136, which is roadside geology. That was passed this year relating to complaints and grievances regarding roadside geological formations. On the bottom of page 2, top of page 3, we correct a statutory reference in Senate file 125, digital assets existing law, based on the passage of House Bill 30, trust company statute updates this year, and section 6 and 7 on page 3, changes needed to make the rest of the amendment work throughout the bill. And like I said, there will be more amendments coming in regards to second reading and third reading. That's if this body decides to pass the revisers bill. I hope you do.
Thank you, Representative Lindholm. We will start with the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The chair is not in doubt on this one. I think you should.
And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to remove the committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate file 31 and ask for your favorable consideration.
And you've heard the motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed.
No.
There he is.
All right.
Both have passed the committee of the whole. Question on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Speaker Harshman's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate file 31 do pass, please say aye. And those opposed? Senate file 31 has passed the committee of the whole. Majority Leader Barlow.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You read the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed?
Reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate file number 114, do pass, amended. Senate file number 122, failed to pass committee of the whole and was indefinitely postponed. Majority floor leader moved beg leave to rise and sit again at 1 p.m. Senate file number 144, do pass, amended. Senate file number 134, do pass, amended. Pursuant to Mason's sections 480 and 483 and House Rule 6-6B, the House voted to rescind the vote on Senate file 122. Senate file 122, do pass, amended. Senate file 161, do pass, amended. Senate file 31, do pass, amended. Signed, Representative Pelkey, Chairman.
Chairman Pelkey.
Mr. Speaker, I move the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Congratulations. Thank you, Chairman Pelkey. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, ladies and gentlemen, we've done some things we haven't done in a while, or maybe ever done in some of our tenures. So we have a choice today, and I'm just going to give you a summary of what it is. I'm going to move to lay back the entire second and third reading till Monday. And that means on Monday we'll have a big second reading, we'll have an accelerated second reading to third reading, and then we'll have third reading. That still leaves us within 3 days to get to the end of the session to work our bills, do conference committees. But this is a objectionable motion, so if someone objects to the motion, which I'm going to make, to 7-3, if anybody wants to look up the motion, 7-3, laying back a bill, and I'm going to lay them back and I'll read every bill, you can object, and then we take a vote on the objection. And so if somebody objects, we'll take a vote on the objection. If we object to laying them back, then we continue working for the day. And I guess we go through the rest of the list. So, with that, Mr. Speaker, pursuant to House Rule 7-3, I move the following bills on second reading be laid back. Senate File 103, 111, 118, 120, 142, 149, 150, 156, 159, 162. Additionally, 104, 107, 109, 115, Senate Joint 6. I further move the laying back for 1 day of third reading bills, Senate File 40, 46, 47, 49, 66, 74, 146. Mr. Speaker.
Okay, that motion is in order. Is there an objection by any member of the body? Representative Larson Lloyd.
I do object. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we've got time. Let's get going.
Okay, so there's an objection. Representative Zwanitzer.
Just a question, Mr. Speaker. Can we object to individual bills, or is it collectively? I mean, seriously, I know some of these are going to be a while, and some of these are pretty quick. So motion of the chair, can we amend certain out of the motion, or is it all or nothing?
Mr. Chairman, right now the motion's all or nothing. Okay. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I think maybe we could do the third reading and not do the second reading, and I think that's a good middle ground, maybe. Thank you.
Okay, now we have an objection, and so here's how this works. We're going to vote on this. And let me just check. 1 second. Pause for a second. I just want to check and make sure this is debatable.
No, I think he asked the question. My objection is the one that's on the table. Right?
Yeah. So, okay, any further debate on this motion? Okay, the motion's been made, and we've had an objection. Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman and body, I was under the assumption when that was given that we only had one option. It sounds like there may be a possibility of other options that we can possibly not work all of them, but work some of them. And so with that in mind, I would withdraw my objection.
Okay. Any other member object?
Mr. Speaker,
Zwanitzer.
I think I'd be correct that I would need to object to the motion, and that way, after that, we could have another motion that would list certain bills. But the motion still is all or nothing, so...
That's correct.
So let me at least object for a vote from the body, and then if we all want to go home, great, and if not, we can have some more motions.
Okay, so we do have an objection. So we're going to vote on this objection. If you sustain the objection, we're going to stay here and keep working. That's an aye vote. An aye vote sustains the objection. A no vote will be in favor of the motion to lay these bills back 1 day. Representative Lindholm.
Just for a point of clarification, Mr. Speaker, if I may. So if we vote move these bills to Monday, both second and third reading, we're still going to be seeing those bills on Monday. It doesn't kill any of the bills.
Yeah. Absolutely. So second reading today will be second reading on Monday. Third reading today will be third reading on Monday. Okay. Chief Clerk, any other questions? So an aye vote sustains an objection, and we'll stay here and continue to work second reading. Bills on second reading. A no vote will move these bills back one additional day. Okay? Everybody clear? Okay, great. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barlow.
No.
Blackburn.
No.
Blake.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
No.
Burlingame.
No.
Clausen.
No.
Clem.
No.
Clifford.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Crank.
Aye.
Dayton Selman.
No.
Duncan.
Aye.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
No.
Ayer.
Aye.
Flitner.
Aye.
Freeman.
Freeman?
No. Furphy.
No.
Gray.
Aye.
Greer. Excused. Haley.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Henderson.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kinner.
No.
Kirkbride. Excused. Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
No.
Lindholm.
No.
Laux.
No.
McGuire.
Aye.
Miller.
No.
Newsom.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrop excused. Obermuller.
No.
Olson.
No.
Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
No.
Pieperinen.
No.
Ponell.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Salazar.
No.
Schwartz.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Summers.
Aye.
Stiff.
Aye.
Stivar.
No.
Sweeney. Sweeney? Aye.
Tass.
Aye. Walters.
Aye.
Washit.
Aye.
Western.
Aye.
Wilson.
Aye.
Winter.
No.
Yin.
No.
Zwanitzer.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Closing vote. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Summers. Aye to no. Further changes? Closing vote. The vote is closed. 18 aye, 39 no, 3 excused.
Okay, members, by your vote, you have not sustained the objection, so Rule 7-3, those bills will be laid back one additional day. Okay, Mr. We're at that order of business now. Okay, we're at that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 411. Mr. Speaker, Senate file number 131, Spending Policy Amendments. The Senate failed to concur on House amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Noes 30. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 412. Mr. Speaker, the Senate will concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 99, Voting Systems and Ballots. Ayes 28, noes 2. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 413. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 29, Unclaimed Life Insurance Benefits. The bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 414. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 111, Environmental Quality Council Voting Amendments. Ayes 24, noes 6. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 415. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 113, Special Electric Utility Agreements. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 416. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 118, Family College Savings Program Repeal. Ayes 30. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 417. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 125, District Court Filing Fees. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 16, noes 14. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 418. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 130, Wyoming Cowboy Legacy Week. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 419. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 142, Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board Duties. Ayes 30. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 420. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 143, Pre-Sentence Investigation Reports, Judicial Discretion. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 421. Mr. Speaker, House Bill number 148, State Offices Contract Transparency. House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 21, noes 9. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 422. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 155, Guardianships, Reintegration, Planning Authorized. Ayes 30, sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 423, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 163, Child Labor Penalties. Ayes 25, noes 5, sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 424, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 169, Lifetime Fishing License for Permanently Disabled Persons. Ayes 29, noes 1. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 425, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 170, Child Protective Service Workers Training. Ayes 18, noes 12. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 426. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 173, Court Supervised Treatment Program Account. Ayes 30. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 427. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 195, Electronic Notice, Portable Electronic Device Insurance. Ayes 30. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 428. Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 196, Local Regulations Subdivision. Ayes 30, sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 429, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 211, Mental Health and Substance Use Coverage Parity. Ayes 20, noes 10. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 430, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 214, Real Estate Brokers Retention of Records. Ayes 30, sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 431, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 229, Payment Processor State Government. Ayes 30, sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 432, Mr. Speaker, House Bill Number 235, Care of Animals. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 17, noes 13. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 433, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 253, Water Service Public Utility Exemption. Ayes 30, sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 434, Mr. Speaker, House Bill Number 297, K3 Reading Assessment and Intervention Program. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 28, noes 2. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 435, Mr. Speaker, House Bill Number 15, Motor Vehicles, Titles, and Bills of Sale. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 436. Mr. Speaker, House Bill Number 20, Program Evaluation Standards. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 23, noes 7. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message Number 437, Mr. Speaker, House Bill Number 62, Wyoming Utility Token Act, Property Amendments. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Sincerely, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Thank you. Certainly got a workout today, Mr. Reading Clerk. Okay, members, any committee announcements? Any privileges of the floor? Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've got two tickets to that CSU Cowgirls game tomorrow in Laramie. If anybody wants them, come over and see me. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until Monday, February 25th, 2019, at 9:30 a.m.
Okay, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, say no. Okay, the House is adjourned until Monday, February 25th at 9:30 a.m. Travel safe, members.